think kids today suffer from an inflated sense of self-esteem because we indulge them with too much praise, trophies for doing nothing special, and easy A's in school? And it's because of those permissive helicopter parents who want to shield their kids from any disappointment or hard work, for that matter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, our guest this hour will say you might want to think again. There's really no evidence to support that children would benefit from more experiences with failure or feelings of inadequacy. And we will explore with him what he calls the myth of the spoiled child. So what do you think? Do kids have it too easy today? And is it hurting them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Elfie Cohn, the author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. He's a frequent lecturer on topics of education and parenting, and he also wrote a recent article that appeared in the New York Times, Do Our Kids Get Off Too Easy? Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Now, I'm somewhat of an expert on spoiled children because I am the baby of the family. You're not talking about me, though, are you?
Well, that's the wonderful thing about raising children. Everyone's an expert by virtue of either having them or certainly having been one. And thus we hear these claims and assertions about what kids are like and how they should be raised based solely on anecdote and personal experience, even though the evidence often doesn't support those claims.
Right. But you're talking about a broader concept here. What is the myth of the spoiled child?
Well, it's exactly the series of claims that you mentioned in your introduction. Some of them are hard to square with each other. On the one hand, parents are supposed to be permissive and indulgent. On the other hand, parents are accused of hovering and over-parenting. And then kids are accused of just about everything under the sun, as you indicated, having inflated self-esteem and not having to do anything and being spoiled and narcissistic and entitled and all of that stuff. It's extraordinary that there's this narrative that has formed, which includes the idea that kids get things too easily, that is really deeply socially conservative in the underlying values and assumptions about kids and human nature, but that's become widely accepted even among people who are politically liberal. Those claims have become the conventional wisdom, and you hear them repeated endlessly in magazines, newspapers, on the radio, in blogs, and so on, and in almost no case are any solid data offered. So in the myth of the spoiled child, I not only try to show that there's no empirical basis for these claims, but I try to explore some of the underlying ideology that drives them.
Do we think that it's kids today, and it wasn't us? My generation wasn't like that. It's the kids today that are like this.
Yeah, I start the book by giving a bunch of examples of these claims in contemporary articles and books, all of which seem to harken back to the good old days a generation ago when excellence mattered and when parents set limits and when kids could experience frustration and failure that helped them cope with the real world. And then I back up a generation and show that people were making exactly the same claims, and then I back up a generation before that, and so on. So when you look at the fact that, you know, I give a claim that could have been Time magazine's cover last week, and in fact it was in 1911.
Wow.
It really ought to make people with this sort of grouchy, wistful sensibility sit down and shut up. But of course they never do.
But, you know, we didn't get trophies for, I don't know, participating in our homework assignment. How come kids today get those trophies?
Well, I've never heard of trophies for homework.
Well, you know.
I've heard of little trinkets to say thanks for playing that go out to all the little kids. You know, something so innocuous that clearly the kids still know who won the game. And yet it evokes a fury you know, among people with a certain right-wing sensibility, you know, unlike the good old days when only the conquering heroes got a trophy. So again, the kids know what it means and what it doesn't mean, but there's an ideology here that it's vital to reward people only when they're successful, and ideally when they've triumphed over other people, because of a scarcity mentality that privileges competition above all, so that it's critical that rewards be conspicuously withheld from people who didn't triumph. And you can't even give them something that looks like a reward. Otherwise, that's supposed to mean the end of Western civilization. And now children won't try hard, and they get off too easy, and we got to take them down a peg because they think they're special. I mean, it's an extraordinary degree of rage and completely misconceived assumptions about the nature of motivation that drive these accusations that we're too soft on kids, and we need to. We need to make them jump through hoops to get anything good, even support and care from adults, or even self-esteem, which is thought, according to this mindset, to be something that kids should have to earn, you know, because heaven forbid they should have a core of faith and confidence in themselves unconditionally.
Well, where did this come from? I mean, this rage.
You know, I try to unpack it, and I have to confess I don't have the answer to that. I think I have some speculations. I think part of it is based on a kind of perennial resentment of younger people by older people. Maybe we're envious of them because they have more years left, you know, and we think we've put in our hard work and they're getting away with too much. Again, people have been saying that for centuries. Maybe it has to do with a belief in the value of deprivation in its own right, regardless of its effects, or a belief in scarcity, that there's only so much excellence to go around, not everybody can be good at something. The main value, I think, that underlies this is almost like at the intersection of economics and theology. It's where the marketplace mentality meets the idea that you have to earn your way into heaven. So I think much of this accusation of indulgence is driven by the value of conditionality, the idea that nothing good should ever come to someone, even a child, unless he or she has an accomplishment to show for it. And whenever there appears to be a diminution of this, then people just become livid, you know, and talk about the scourge of grade inflation, of being praised without having done anything really impressive, of self-esteem that's inflated and all of this. But again, the extraordinary thing is how it's almost impossible to find an article on this subject in the last 20 years in a major publication that doesn't adopt this position, even among people who don't seem to be social conservatives on other issues.
Yeah. Isn't there any evidence whatsoever that that kids need to experience disappointment every once in a while, or that they won't always get what they want?
Well, first, I've never met a child who didn't experience disappointment and frustration on a regular basis. So people who claim that kids mm-hmm. today have it too easy and they need more failure, I think, are really acknowledging implicitly their complete ignorance about the inner lives of children, or perhaps their memories of their own childhood. The idea that kids need more failure and frustration is sometimes justified on the idea that the best way to prepare kids for the difficulties and unpleasantness they're going to face in life is by deliberately making them unpleasant, making them unhappy when they're young. I call this BGUTI, which stands for Better Get Used to It. So even though there's no evidence, for example, that young children benefit from grades, competition, homework, for example. We do it to them anyway because, damn it, they're going to face this stuff later. You know, it reminds me of the old Monty Python sketch called Getting Hit on the Head Lessons, where somebody is smacked around because it's excellent preparation for being smacked around later. The reality is, according to lots of psychological research, that what best prepares kids to deal with challenges and failure is success and unconditional acceptance. When kids fail at something, all else being equal, they begin to think of themselves as failures, and they become less likely to succeed on subsequent tasks. I'm oversimplifying because there are different variations and situations that make it more or less likely that failure will have that effect. But in general, failure is greatly overrated. And so then you have to turn around and say, if the evidence doesn't support this idea, that, you know, you don't prepare kids to deal with unhappiness by making them unhappy, then what is this telling us about the people who believe it? And I think for many of these issues that we've been talking about, they really, these accusations about kids being spoiled and helicopter parenting say more about the values and beliefs and experiences of the people making these accusations than they say about objective reality.
Well, what is the harm, Elfie Cohn, if some grumpy old people have grumpy old thoughts about kids today?
First, they create a kind of vicious cycle, a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, where young people keep hearing they're really this bad, they're self-centered, they're spoiled, they're not going to be able to make it in the tough business world. They may start to internalize those views, and other people may start to believe this too. It's just like a nasty political ad campaign that defines politicians in the minds of the voters, even if there's no truth to the accusations. It becomes reality. And I think also it distracts our attention from trying to improve some of the structural features of the world we live in and our society. I mean, if the problem is just that kids are too big for their britches and they need more self-discipline and grit to persist with tasks, then you're not asking whether the tasks are valuable, worth doing, and who decided they should be done. In other words, you don't spend time trying to make this into a fairer, more just, and compassionate culture at work, at school, and elsewhere. If the problem rests with bad parents and spoiled kids.
We are talking about the myth of the spoiled child with Elfie Cohn, who is the author of the book by the same name, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. So what do you think? Do you think kids today are coddled and lazy because of helicopter parenting? Do you think that they suffer from, you know, an inflated sense of self-esteem? Do you think this is a problem? Let us know your questions and maybe your challenges at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Elfie Cohn, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, and welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones. Nathaniel in Eau Claire is with us first. Hello, Nathaniel.
Hi there. I just wanted to bring something up. Now, I'm a pretty young adult. I'm about 24 years old, and I feel like I was kind of the last of that younger generation to kind of experience going through without, you know, getting a trophy for competing in a baseball tournament and, you know, getting last place or something like that. But my question is, and kind of my comment is, I think the problem with a lot of kids nowadays, I have a half-sister who's about 10 years younger than me, who is kind of going through this, and she's getting this this thing that I like to call the escalator of results versus, you know, me and younger older generations growing up on the mentality of like the ladder of opportunity. You know, and with the ladder, you know, you have to climb it, you have to work your way up. You know, maybe teachers in the school system will provide a little base for you if you fall back on so you don't break a knee like you used to back in the day. But the difference is that when you got to that level that you wanted to get at or that you couldn't really get past, you had the strength in your arms and legs to carry you on that level. But nowadays, our systems are, you know, and our parents are setting up these mentalities of, you know, everything's given to you. You don't need to work. You don't need to put in the effort, you know, and everything is about entitlement. So, you know, sure, the escalator gets them to the top and gets them to where they're supposed to be, but when they're left on their own or they step off onto that level, they haven't, you know, worked up the muscle strength to walk around on that level.
No, he's only 24, Alfie. He's not
I know, that's what I was thinking. This is like the perfect example of how every generation says exactly this about the generation younger. The baby boomers were accused, you know, of being lazy and selfish by their parents who had to work hard. And then the baby boomers turned around to say that Generation X kids were slackers, who turned around to say the same about the millennials. And now we have a 24-year-old with this same right wing, why don't they pull their own weight, things are too easy for them, about kids younger than them. No doubt, you know, the younger sibling he's talking about will do the same thing. This is a profoundly strong indictment of the content of this song that we've heard sung by everybody does this with zero evidence that things are really that bad, let alone that they're worse than they used to be.
How do you respond to the challenge that if everyone thinks that kids are spoiled, then maybe they are?
Well, it depends on the claim. I'm interested in how people have said this over time, which means that someone claiming that things are bad now, uniquely, unprecedentedly bad, when in fact everyone has been saying the same thing going back decades, if not centuries, that pretty much pulls the rug out of the claim on its merits. I suppose it's theoretically possible that all parents everywhere in all time spoil their children. But you'd have to be clear about what that means, what the effects are. You'd have to compare that with the effects of raising children in a different way and show some data. But if you're making a claim that they're more spoiled now, then it's, first of all, no supporting evidence. But second of all, if your parents and grandparents were saying the same thing, yeah, you know, it certainly should give you pause at the very least.
You don't think that there is any evidence that there's any differences in how an 18-year-old today was an 18-year-old is today than was a generation or two ago, a little more dependent on parents, perhaps a little more. I want a great job right out of the gate. I'm not going to pay my dues. There is no evidence that there's a different mentality of the kids today than there were yesterday.
Well, you know, I saw this article in the Atlantic Monthly that said, yeah, kids have always been pleasure seekers, but what we're currently witnessing is different from anything we have ever seen in the young before. That sounds like what you just said. The author continues, parents teach nothing wholeheartedly. Things come so easily to children, they fail to develop any self-discipline and forget about traditional values. Today, it's just a cult du moi. If you missed that in the Atlantic Monthly, that's probably because it was published in 1911.
All right, let's go to Jody in Madison. Hi, Jody.
Hi, I'm a veterinarian, and in animal studies, more recent animal studies, it's been shown that negative reinforcement impedes learning and sometimes stops learning and also causes anger and fear. And as humans have the same limbic system, the same reticular activating system as animals, it would work the same in us. Although we have different parts of our brain that are a little different, but we still use that to deal with emotional things. So to me, what he's saying makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Alfie?
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Thomas in Waukesha. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. Yes, I would like to ask a couple of things real quick. One is the thought that because children or parents today say that their kids are struggling more just like the parents before them did, it seems like that's a hard statement really to back up as being a problem, because it'd be like saying the dollar today is worth less than it was before, or the dollar is worth more than it was before. Well, if inflation is increasing every year, then in a sense it is. And if in a sense 1911 parents were saying one thing and parents today are saying the same thing, is it possible that kids today are really worse than they were in 1911 in that sense? And so it has just been a continual growth. But besides that, the second thing I'd really like to ask, and now I'll take my the answer off the air. The second thing I'd like to ask is, are we possibly missing the real issue? I think everyone has a voice in their head talking to them. That voice is either telling them how bad they are, or in some cases it's telling them how great they are. And when we listen to that voice, we really just totally focus on ourselves. So it's a very egocentric mentality. We can ride a roller coaster. But instead of that, if we were to be looking at how can we be a ministry or a blessing or a servant to others around us, I wonder if that would change a lot of this issue altogether. As someone who believes that theology and a belief in God actually says not that we earn our way to a better life, but rather that God has done something for us as a free gift, it seems to me like that actually is along the lines of telling us that you may not deserve it, but this person is willing to do this for you. And then as a result of that, for me to serve others in the same way with unconditional, seems like that would be a better way to go personally.
Any thoughts on that, Alfie?
Well, let's talk about the first point he made. While it's theoretically possible that things are even worse today than they were in 1911, the fact that there's an uncanny resemblance between what people said then and what they're saying now certainly puts the burden of proof on people who make that claim to show that things really are different or worse, and I haven't found any such evidence. It is true that people have voices in their heads about their own value, but I think the relevant difference is not just I'm great or I'm lousy. I think, and psychological research supports that, the most important feature of self-esteem is not just how high or low it is, but the extent to which it's conditional or unconditional. Where people get into trouble is not when they just think they are not great, but when they think their value depends on anything they've done, or I'm only worthwhile when I do well in school, or get recognized by my boss, or I'm attractive, or funny, or clever, or religious, or anything else. The unconditional sense of a core of faith in oneself as valuable paradoxically frees people up to be more other-oriented, which I think is what the caller was talking about. When you don't have the deafening clatter of your own unmet psychological needs in your ear, that constant sense of I'm not good enough, you're actually able to be more open to others and their needs and more responsive to them. And so parents who accept their kids and love them for who they are, not for what they do, giving them the message that, you know, my care for you is never diminished, even when you screw up or fall short, provide the ground for people to have that unconditional sense of self-acceptance that allows them to then accept and reach out to help others. Some people may turn to the supernatural domain to get beyond the self, but for others of us, the interpersonal domain, other people, provides us an opportunity to reach beyond mere self-gratification.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Alfie Cohn, the author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a view for him. Or you can send an email, talk@wpr.org. Mary in Dubuque is next. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I think that your speaker is correct. But I think that's a tale as old as time is, you know, I remember my father talking about how he had to walk to school uphill both ways in the winter and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I say the same thing to my children. So we always think kids are spoiled. But honestly, sometimes I think raising two children, it's it's more about parents than it is the kids. We justify everything. We're competing, what our kids do. You know, my kid's going to this school, or he got this in his GPA. I think it's more about parents and not so much about the kids. I think it's our inadequacies that we're seeing, and we're using, you know, the kids as an excuse. Oh, they'll never grow up to be, you know, they're so unorganized, or yada, yada, yada. We're giving them too many trophies. You know, it's hard being a kid.
This comment reminds me, it gets back to the question you asked before, Joy, about what's the harm of people holding these beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And one harm is that when you start to take this seriously, that kids are all spoiled and narcissistic and so on, and they haven't had enough experience with failure, and it leads parents to be even more controlling and conditional than they already are. The vast majority of resources for parents, books and articles and seminars, are basically answering the question, how do I get my kid to do whatever I want? Instead of the question, what do our kids need and how can we meet those needs? And so there tends to be a move toward even more use of punishments and rewards, and a more of a focus on getting compliance rather than responding to what kids need and will help them flourish and become good people. And in fact, some might even argue that that's part of the point of this distorted description of the problem today is kids don't get enough discipline and not enough firm limits, and parents are doing too much for them, that is precisely the way you would depict reality if your goal were to prescribe a more controlling approach. And so that's what we end up doing. More regulation, more surveillance, more consequences, less trust, and we can always justify it in the name of, you know, preparing them for the way life is, helping them to learn limits, to experience the glories of failure. And the cycle turns, and they grow up not having their needs met and say, these kids today are spoiled. They need tougher discipline.
Yeah, you say that one of the myths of the spoiled child is that there is an epidemic of helicopter parenting. Why is that a myth?
Because there's no evidence to support it. First of all, there was no evidence on the subject at all until just a few years ago. That's why all the articles you'll find in the popular press about helicopter parenting contain only anecdotes meant to make us tisk our tongue and roll our eyes, and quotations from other people who agree with the writer. But now there is a little evidence on helicopter parenting, particularly of older children, like those of college age. And the evidence is actually very interesting. The first thing it shows is that helicopter parenting appears to be quite rare, so that even people who are very much critical of that idea that parents are too close to or intervening too much in the lives of their grown children have to acknowledge that when they go looking for it, they don't find much. That's why the same anecdotes are repeated in a media echo chamber to give the impression of an epidemic when there's no data to support that claim. The second thing you find is that what we might call helicopter parenting of kids in college turns out to be more beneficial than damaging.
How so?
And that's really interesting. When you do surveys, for example, there was one a few years ago of thousands of college students at representative college campuses across the country, those who reported that their parents were very closely involved in their lives, to the point that many critics would say, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Those kids were thriving. It turned out that they were doing better both psychologically and academically than kids who got less support from their parents. And this was contrary to hypothesis. The people doing the survey didn't expect that result, which is often when you know you're onto something. And the third result from the research is that it's not really one size fits all, that the effects of close parental involvement with grown kids depends a lot on class, ethnicity, gender. And for example, you find that kids who are the first in their families to go away to college or go to college at all often need more support than they're getting, and a lot more than conservative critics of helicopter parenting think they ought to get. So there's this upper middle class, largely white, affluent, educated value that says as soon as kids get to be a certain age, they need to be self-sufficient. Kick them out of the nest, make them fend for themselves, it's for their own good. But that's actually not a value that's shared in all subcultures. Some kids are raised in neighborhoods where interdependence is valued at least as much as independence. And so when kids from those neighborhoods are made to make it on their own and stop texting mommy so often, they're actually at a disadvantage, and it's a poor fit for the very different values with which they were raised.
We are talking with Elfie Cohn about his new book, The Myth of the Spoiled Child. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or a challenge for him. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Wondering if you think kids today are spoiled, whether they suffer from an inflated sense of self-esteem because they got too many trophies or praise for doing nothing all that worthwhile. Well, our guest says that's the myth of the spoiled child, and we're talking about it with Elfie Cohn and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Kelly in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Kelly.
Hi. I've been listening as I was driving, and I'm just flabbergasted, and I love the commentary that's going on with your guests. And I guess I'm living as a stepmother with a 22-year-old son. He is my stepson. And he is going to college, but I am watching self-entitlement go down in my home. He doesn't have to work, and he gets a car, he gets money, he gets whatever he wants. He comes back from class and says, I taught the teachers today, they're so stupid. I'm so much better, so much smarter. This is ridiculous. And just this feeling that he doesn't have to do anything, that he just gets given anything, everything. And I think what scares me the most is what happens when you set him free? What kind of platform is he going to have? I mean, he doesn't have to cook. He doesn't have to do laundry. He doesn't have to do anything. So it's interesting to watch it happen. And his friends have the same mentality as far as that they're better, that their parents are paying for everything, that they deserve all this because they're smart, because they're in college. And I guess for me, I don't understand it. I had to work. I had to earn a first place trophy. I didn't get a trophy just because I showed up. You know, all of these things. And I understand each generation has that, you know, oh, my God, the next generation's worse. But these people, they don't even have social skills. They text. They don't even look people in the face and talk to them. Their social skills stink.
Yeah, you know? That's what they said about our generation when we were able to use the phone instead of talking to people face-to-face before there was email and so on. I mean, this, again, is a perfect example of exactly the widespread beliefs that when you peel back the layer and the anecdotes, the stories of my kid or the kid next door, you find there's absolutely no evidence to suggest, A, that this is anywhere near as widespread as people assume based on their own sample of one, B, any worse than it was in the old days, even though there are some particulars that are new, like the use of texting, and C, that support from parents on balance is something to be worried about, because in fact, the much greater threat to many more young people is that they receive insufficient support from their parents. But the idea here, I mean, beyond, let me tell you about this one kid and from that infer an epidemic, is, you know, years ago I looked at some evidence about claims about how people act crazy when the full moon is out. Mm-hmm. And people can show you examples of this. You know, last week there was a full moon. I swear, you wouldn't believe the way people were driving. And I saw this one woman out on the street. It was crazy. Well, in fact, there's absolutely no difference in human behavior based on the phase of the moon. That's been completely debunked years ago. But people notice and remember the things, the examples that support their beliefs going in. So nobody notices when people act crazy and it happens to be the first quarter of the moon, or a time when the moon was full and everything was perfectly calm. And this is exactly the case that we're seeing now. The kind of arrogance that this caller describes, I see in lots of old people too. And conversely, I see lots of millennials, lots of young people who don't have that grandiose sense of self-satisfaction, but are really committed to trying to make the world a better place and are sometimes even pretty self-deprecating. But we don't notice those examples. We notice the ones that support our beliefs, and our beliefs invariably are those that are disparaging of young people.
Let's go to Samuel in Milwaukee next. Hello, Samuel.
Hey, how are you today, Joy?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I've got a number of things. I agree strongly with the guest on how personal bias strongly affects how people see the world, see their environment, and definitely see the people who they're responsible for as children or employees. I'd like to ask how many legitimate studies have been done polling people such as teachers and employers who I feel would have the best really idea with a wide range of kids coming through and young adults or older people being employed as to who's really useful. I mean, I was in the Army for 8 years and I can tell you, having a large pool of soldiers that I've been responsible for of all ages, there's a definite shift, you know, in the last couple of years as, you know, the 17, 18, 19-year-olds would come in where, you know, parents would call me and ask for special treatment as their supervisor, as their staff sergeant, platoon sergeant, and where the attitudes shift. And I understand that happens naturally. The oldest recorded kids are spoiled comment, I think, dates back to like Aristotle or something, who was mad that kids all didn't rise in the room when their parents arrived. And so I know it goes way back. But I would say that, like, having been in the third world and the second world, there is a marked difference in just the general usefulness of people around here. Of people in America. And part of that comes with comfort and increased standard of living and the fact that, you know, you don't have to, you know, everyone doesn't have to have their own farm to eat. And there's different types of responsibilities that come out of a society like this. But I do think there's something to be said for, you know, kids in South America are much more useful than the vast majority of kids I meet here in my girlfriend's middle school.
And I'm sorry, Sam, you're saying they're more useful?
I'm sorry, yeah. How many teachers and employers have really been polled and studied for this kind of information?
Joy, I'm with you. I don't understand what it means to say that some people are more useful than others. This comment has sort of gone all over the map here. If the claim is that there's more parental involvement or something of the kind today, well, that's the belief that I went looking to find evidence to support and really didn't come up with any. But if the claim is that people in now versus then, or this country versus other countries are more useful, I don't know what it means to say that about people.
Well, let me just say, even though I know it's anecdotal, but Samuel is not the only person to say, you know, or teacher to say, now parents call me and yell at me more than they used to. And you're saying you went looking for evidence that was the case and didn't find it. What about you know, Samuel and the teacher and my neighbor and all these people that are saying, I never used to have parents call me to change that grade from a B to an A, and now I get it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the range of time in a single person's career suggests that there would be in the last, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years, a massive shift. That doesn't map onto the usual claims one hears about a whole generation that's spoiled. You wouldn't expect to see a big difference in 2014 versus in 2000. These people are claiming it's different now than it was before these people were teaching, so that it's kind of problematic to have somebody say, it gets worse every year, which is exactly what my teachers used to say. When it comes to work, the workplace, I could only find one study that actually looked carefully at the prevalence, not comparing this time to previous times, but just to say, how often does it even happen now? So at Michigan State University, they interviewed 725 employers, and of them, 77% said they hardly ever witnessed a parent while hiring a college senior. But they added the aberrant incidence of involvement of parents yielded the most interesting anecdotes for media stories and gave the impression, you know, that helicopter parents are lurking behind every water cooler. There was another study that looked at intense parental support of grown children outside of college in the workplace. Again, I could find one recent study that found 1 in 5 or 6, depending on who you ask, parents seemed to be intensely involved in their children's lives. And it's not even clear that intense involvement is maladaptive. But for whatever impact it has, it doesn't seem actually to be happening as often. And thus we come to the full moon effect about why so many people can believe something is pervasive, even when it really wasn't. By the way, there was a story about, I think it was General Westmoreland. Mm-hmm. I may have the general wrong. I can look this up. But when he went to West Point, his mother took an apartment right next to West Point and lived with him to provide him with support. So, I mean, it's a great counterexample to the claim that, A, you can't be successful if you have a doting parent, and, B, the problem just started a few years ago.
Jackie in Mequon is with us now. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm calling because I'd like to make a couple of comments. First, thank you, Elsie, for standing strong in your convictions about the myth of the spoiled child. Listening to some of the comments of the people calling in, you can hear some of that rage mentality. I'm 32. I've worked really hard for everything that I have. I have 3 children who range in age from 15 to 2. And I think that it's our job as parents, you know, it's our responsibility for bringing them into this world to give them all of the tools necessary to face the adversity that they're going to find in the world. And yeah, they don't necessarily have to walk to school 5 miles both ways in the snow, like some other generations had to. But there are other issues that they have to deal with that other generations have not, such as, you know, so bullying at school or trying to be the best, you know, meeting their parents' expectations of really superficial goals and outcomes. And I think our job as parents is to teach them how to live wholeheartedly. And when they're secure in themselves, I watch a lot of 20-something I guess children, I can call them, who really have strong self-worth, they really pass that on to those around them, and they put others into part of that communal sense of being instead of this individualistic society that we live in, and I think we all benefit from that.
Yeah, I appreciate the comment. I think it's interesting to look both at what our goal is for our kids, or goals, And what are the tools, to use the word you mentioned, that help them meet those goals? So one goal is certainly to help kids be self-sufficient and independent, but that's the only one you hear about. My goal for my children is also to help my kids be compassionate and connected to others. And so if all of our parenting is based on how do I allow them to fend for themselves, I may be missing the other half of that picture in terms of objectives. And then the second question is, even for self-sufficiency, what are the tools that help them to accomplish that? Well, it turns out that You know, standing by while they skin their knee, or doing nothing when they are in trouble, so that they'll learn to comfort themselves and come up with their own solutions, turns out not to be that effective most of the time. And I think I agree with the caller here that helping kids feel unconditionally supported actually gives them more tools to be able to deal with adversity than making them cope on their own when they're young.
Thank you, Jackie, for the call. Judy in Conover is with us now. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Joy. I thank you for your continuous excellent shows and guests, and you're a great moderator. And Elfie, I agree with the idea that you're presenting that you can't give too much emotional support and encouragement to your children. I guess the little part of it that I see maybe changing is that we are more often materially rewarding our children than we did in the past. For example, you used to go to a birthday party and come home with a balloon. Now you come home with a gift that is more substantial than the one that we used to give to the birthday girl or boy. And another thing, my daughter's worked at a summer camp, and I think it's a huge gift to send your child away to summer camp. And they said that, you know, most of the kids were just receiving these care packages of toys and gifts and basically junk because, boo-hoo, they had to go away to camp or something. So there's this whole idea that you have to, like, you know, give your kids all this stuff to show them that they are loved. And I just think that maybe encouraging something outside of just generally being empathetic and supportive. And I love the comment made by the previous caller and your comments back, because really, if you emotionally encourage your child, they will go out into the world and pass it forward, and they're not going to be the bully. They're going to be the one who's really concerned about the people around them, because that's what they grew up with.
So, Judy, thank you very much. We're running kind of short on time, so I do need to get Alfie to respond to your comments. What about the too many material rewards?
How common this situation is she describes, I honestly don't know. I haven't seen any research. It may be that in the circle she or I run in, that's more common, but that doesn't mean it's true in all subcultures. It may be. I do agree that showering kids with too many material possessions can be a problem. I call the book The Myth of the Spoiled Child, but I'm not talking about spoiling in the material sense, but the belief about certain ways of raising a child. I'm actually concerned about rewarding children with anything, not just with material goods, even with praise, so they feel conditionally accepted. We tell them, you have to do this to get that. You have to jump through my hoops to get some reward. So I find rewards problematic for reasons that go well beyond just material possessions. And, you know, I wrap up the book by saying, even if it were true that kids were self-centered, the way to respond to that is not to emphasize self-discipline and obedience. The way to do that, to do something about that, is to pull them out of themselves to try to make the world a better place. And that means helping kids to question reality, to challenge institutions when they think they're unjust, to become reflective rebels. And that helps not only them to be compassionate, it helps to make our society a better place.
We'll leave the conversation there, too. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Elfie Cohn, author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope you also join us tomorrow at this time. It's the Week in Review. We'll have two guests from differing perspectives discussing the week's top news stories. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.